Hi, I'm Bill Arnold. According to what I've just been told, here's the podcast for the Early Morning Late Show. Enjoy our conversations. Good morning. It's 4 minutes after the hour. I want to start right out of Isaiah chapter 53 this morning, starting in verse 4. Surely he took up our pain and bore our suffering, yet we considered him punished by God, stricken by him and afflicted. But he was pierced for our transgressions. He was crushed for our iniquities. The punishment that brought us peace was on him, and by his wounds we are healed. We all, like sheep, have gone astray. Each of us has turned to our own way, and the Lord has laid on him the iniquity of us all. Chapter 53 of Isaiah, powerful. We had a conversation with Dr. Mitch Glazer, and he has actually written a book on Isaiah chapter 53. We're going to enjoy that conversation again during this Holy Week. We're going to do that in just about a minute. But welcome to your Wednesday. I'm so glad you're joining me this morning. It is March 28th, and we've got Easter Sunday coming up. Very excited around here for Easter Sunday. We have a very interesting show today. After Mitch Glazer, we're going to have Dr. Ken Kaiser in studio, Bill English from BibleandBusiness.com, and then a little bit later in the second hour, Congressman Tom Emmer will be with us. So he will be live in studio. So how exciting is that? That's our day. It's 5 minutes after the hour. We'll take a very short break and hear from Dr. Mitch Glazer. Welcome back to the show. On my list of the most interesting people I have met through radio, Dr. Mitch Glazer would be right up near the top. He is since 1997. He's been served as president of Chosen People Ministries, one of the oldest and largest messianic missions in the United States. And he's joining us this morning from New York. Good morning, Dr. Glazer.
Shalom. Good morning, Bill.
Shalom. Good morning. I'm very interested in light of Easter as we're getting ready to celebrate the resurrection of our Savior, the death and resurrection of our Savior. I'm very interested in gaining a greater understanding of Isaiah 53 in light of Easter. I know you've written a book about it.
Yes. Well, Isaiah 53 is a critical chapter in the Bible, and it's the clearest prediction of the death, of the perfect life and innocence, as well as the death and resurrection of our Messiah Jesus. And so the redemption, of course, that was predicted was fulfilled at Calvary. And that's the basis, of course, for this whole wonderful season of the year that we're about to enter, where we think more deeply about the death and resurrection of Jesus.
Mm-hmm. Now, Mitch, as Christians, how should we be thinking and reflecting and going back and studying Isaiah 53 as we're getting our hearts and minds ready for Easter?
Well, I'm old-fashioned, Bill. I think one of the best ways to do it is to just begin by reading the chapter and then meditating and reflecting on it. And I think that one of the best things to do is to read and reflect on the chapter, and then at the same time go back and forth between the crucifixion accounts, the passion accounts in the Gospels, and I think that that's really meaningful. The question, of course, is where do you start on Isaiah 53? Since we know that in the Old Testament, obviously you had the scriptures were written on scrolls, and there were no chapters and verses.
Mm-hmm. Good point.
And so when for those of us that ride the subway in New York City, we're happy not to take scrolls on the train if we have to read our Bible. So cumbersome. And so different scholars have talked about where it begins. And just by way of background, there are four servant songs in the book of Isaiah. These are really written, it's a cross between poetry and Hebrew prophecy, and they extol the virtues of the servant of the Lord. And they're all part of the second section of Isaiah. First section, 1 through 39, is mostly about judgment with a few rays of hope. And then 40 through 66 of Isaiah is really all about the glorious future of Israel and the people of God. And so sandwiched in the middle there are these beautiful servant songs in Isaiah 42, 44, 50, and then 52, 53. And so the question is, where does the song begin? There are two views. One is that it begins at Isaiah 52, verse 7, and the second view is that it begins at Isaiah 52, verse 13. Mm-hmm. None of the views say that it begins at Isaiah 53, because it's a corpus, it's a psalm, it has, you know, the chapters and verses don't always make complete sense. So if it begins on verse 7, I'm reading from the New American Standard, "How lovely on the mountains are the feet of him who brings good news, who announces peace and brings good news of happiness, who announces salvation and says to Zion, your God reigns." So just real quick, the Hebrew word besorah, which means good news, it's translated good news, is a proclamation of good news. So you don't know what the good news is, though. but it's linked to the Hebrew word shalom, mm-hmm. who announces peace. So we know whatever the good news is, it brings peace and brings good news of happiness. So we know it's linked to happiness. Happiness, the Hebrew word tov is the word for good. It can mean ethical good or external good, which is beauty. And so take it whichever way you want. It's the inner goodness that makes you smile. I mean, you know, that makes your face more attractive, makes your countenance more attractive. So so we know that the good news brings us peace, makes us beautiful inside and out. And it announces salvation, which basically salvation means to deepen or widen, really. And so when David wanted a way of escape, he said, "Save me," which meant widen. Probably he was referring at first, you know, to widening the back of a cave when he was being tracked by Saul. Mm-hmm. And then say to Zion, your God reigns. And of course, that's a reminder that the good news reminds us that God is in control, which I think is a wonderful thought, especially today.
Oh, I love it.
And then you can go through the rest of chapter 7, and you'll see that there are other good parts to it. But when you come to verse 13, the truth is you still don't know what the good news is. If you go back even further into Isaiah 52, verse 7, you've got verse 10, "The Lord bared his holy arm in sight of all the nations, that all the ends of the earth may see the salvation of our God." So even with God choosing Israel, working through Israel, bringing the Messiah through Israel, we always understand that this goes back to the Abrahamic covenant in Genesis 12:3, where God said, "I'll bless those who bless thee, curse those who curse thee, and through you all the families of the earth shall be blessed." So whatever the good news is, it's not limited to the Jewish people. It was always in God's mind and heart from creation forward. It was always for everybody. So God would use the Jewish people as a bridge of redemption, but the Jewish people were not supposed to exclusively hold salvation to themselves. Then in verses 13 through 15, you sort of have an executive summary, which begins to introduce the servant. So can I give you the punchline?
Oh, please.
We only have a few
minutes.
Please,
no.
The punchline, Bill, is that the good news is not a new religion. It's not a philosophy. It's not even a way of life. The good news is a person.
I love it. I love it. Now, Mitch, I'm always interested in learning more about the cultural context and how it would, as a Jewish person, you come to understand from your background the Isaiah 53.
Well, some people say Isaiah 53 is cut out of the Old Testament. That's an old myth.
Okay.
That's kind of a Brooklyn urban myth. You
okay.
know what I mean? And it's not true. Jewish people would never cut anything out of the canon,
mm-hmm.
From which remember, the church inherits the canon from the Jewish people. And so there's no way that anything would be cut out. there are 52 weeks in the year, even in the Jewish year, although it's a little shorter, but 52 weeks. Over the 52 weeks, we divide up the five books of Moses. We read it all through every 52 weeks. You can't read all the rest of the Tanakh. That's the Torah, the Law, the Nevi'im, the Prophets, Ketuvim, the Writings. Tanakh is the Jewish way of saying. So you can't read the rest of the Bible through in 52 weeks, or you'd be in synagogue from morning till night. And so basically, you thematically divide the rest of the Bible so that you have congruent portions of the rest of the Bible to read when you read the portion of the five books of Moses. And, you know, it's a mystical experience to understand how the rabbis developed this congruency, because sometimes it doesn't make any sense. But it's true that we skip from Isaiah 52 to Isaiah 54 in the public reading in the synagogue of this portion. It's actually called the Haftorah. It's not a half a Torah, but it's called the Haftorah. You have the Torah, the five books, the Haftorah, which is the rest. And Isaiah 53 is skipped. And nobody knows why. And of course, some people say it's a conspiracy to keep Isaiah 53 from the Jewish people, and it might be. But, you know, it happened so long ago, nobody really knows why. And so Isaiah 53 is probably not read as much, because that's one of the primary ways Jewish people hear the scriptures and base their weekly studies on what's going to be read on the Sabbath. And so Isaiah 53 doesn't get a lot of airplay, as does a lot of other passages. But in no way is it cut out of the Bible. So that's one of the reasons Chosen People started the Isaiah 53 campaign. So I wrote a book, Isaiah 53 Explained. Any of your readers who want a copy, you can go to Isaiah 53. You can go to Isaiah53.com, believe it or not, and get a free copy.
That's awesome, Mitch. All right.
The only caveat is I hope you'll read it and pass it on to a Jewish friend. But you can go get one.
That's awesome. Let me take a little short break. When we come back, I'll continue my conversation with Dr. Mitch Glazer in just a minute. Welcome back to the show. I have on our studio line Dr. Mitch Glazer. He is the president of Chosen People Ministries, and we're having a lively discussion about Isaiah 53. Mitch, to us as Gentile believers, or to me anyway, the chapter so clearly points to Jesus, Isaiah 53, that he fulfilled this prophecy. How else could this chapter be read?
Okay, Bill, I'm going to give you what's going to be a real aha moment for you and our listeners.
Okay.
It was an aha moment for me when I realized it. And that is, how could Jewish people possibly believe that Isaiah 53 was fulfilled in Jesus when the only way to know that is to read the New Testament, and Jews don't read the New Testament?
All right. So
that's an aha moment, right?
Yeah, you made it very easy for me. So
I mean, there you go.
So the easy way, Mitch, to read this chapter without believing in Jesus as Messiah is to just not read the New Testament.
Well, yeah, well, that's no problem for Jewish people. We don't read it.
So, okay. You
know. But we don't even have to avoid it, Bill. We just don't read it, you know? But Isaiah 53 and so many other great prophecies about the Messiah, it all goes back to the fact that Jewish people probably were not expecting a suffering Messiah at the time Jesus came. And they were probably expecting a Messiah who would fulfill most of the second half of the book of Isaiah, which speaks about the glorious promises that are ethnic and national that are fulfilled, that we will see fulfilled in the second coming of Christ. And so Jewish people focus on those prophecies. There are various sort of minority reports in Jewish literature, rabbinic literature, the Talmud and other things, which imply that there would be a suffering Messiah, but it would be two different Messiahs. It would be Messiah, the son of Joseph, who, like his father Joseph, suffers, and Messiah, son of David, like his father, he reigns as king. But they would not be the same person, and they would definitely not be divine. So Isaiah 53 totally upsets the Jewish apple cart, to be honest with you.
Interesting.
And so what I usually do is instead, in America we have an advantage where in the greater Minneapolis area and Minnesota, you just have a lot more Christianity, for example, than we have in Brooklyn, you know?
That's true.
So you walk through the malls, you hear Christmas carols, and you know, I don't even know if we have many malls in Brooklyn, a few little ones, you know? And so there is some knowledge of Jesus that's sort of intrinsic to American culture. And so because of that, some Jewish people will read Isaiah 53 and say, wow, that sounds a lot like Jesus. You then ask, well, have you ever read the New Testament? They would say, no, not really. Or maybe I had a course in college, but no, I don't really read the New. Then how do you know it sounds like Jesus? Well, I don't know. It just sounds a little like Jesus. See, even they don't know themselves. So some Jewish people pick it up. But I'll tell you who never thinks about Jesus when they read Isaiah 53, and that would be more religious Jews.
Interesting.
And so it's really important for folks listening, number one, to get blessed yourselves, enrich your own life by reflecting on Isaiah 53 during this incredibly wonderful season of the year. But also pray for us as we labor in Israel, where they definitely don't hear Christmas carols in the malls. But and in Brooklyn, you realize between Israel, 6.7 million people, and greater New York area with almost 2 million Jewish people, you've got more than half of the Jewish people in the world. And so we really need your prayers that God would open the eyes of Jewish people. The best thing to do is to sit down with your Jewish friend and just say, you know, I'm reflecting a lot about the death and resurrection of Jesus, which you probably don't believe, but you know I do, and that's what most Christians believe. And I've been reading through Isaiah chapter 53, and it seems like such a clear prediction of what Jesus did. Can I read this to you? Would you read it with me? And because I'm really interested in what you think about it and what the Jewish people think about it. Mm. That, Bill, is a friendly evangelistic strategy because it puts the Jewish person not sort of on the same level, but even as a little bit of a teacher, because you're saying, you know, I don't want to preach my head off to you, but I want to have a dialogue, but I also want you to teach me. That's a great way of approaching a Jewish person.
Yeah, that's powerful, Mitch. Now, in Isaiah 53, I think one of my first memory verses was 53:6, we all like sheep have gone astray. Is there any particular verse in chapter 53 that really
nailed it?
Yeah.
Okay. Actually, just go up two verses. So in verse 8 is really powerful. By oppression and judgment he was taken away, and as for his generation, who considered that he was cut off out of the land of the living for the transgression of my people to whom the stroke was due? So obviously Jesus, whoever fulfills this is Jewish, and he bears the transgressions for his people, which would be the Jewish people. So that's the plain sense of the text. Now, the reason that's critical is because in general, in Jewish thought, believe it or not, those who do think about Isaiah 53 believe it refers to corporate Israel who suffered because of the sins of the Gentiles, or suffered on behalf of the Gentiles. There are varied interpretations. So basically, Isaiah 53 doesn't, in a Jewish mindset, in the more religious academic Jewish world, does not refer to an individual Messiah, but servant of the Lord, but refers to corporate Israel as God's servant, being Or HaGoyim, a light to the Gentiles. Zechariah 12:10, being pierced through for the transgressions. Believe it or not, it's read as the transgressions of the Gentiles, both against God and against the Jews, even.
Mm-hmm.
And so Jewish people bear the suffering of the sins of the Gentiles upon themselves, and in that way they fulfill all those passages in the Old Testament of being intercessors or being a light for the Gentile nations. Verse 8 puts the kibosh on that.
Yeah. Mitch, I always learn so much every time we talk. Thank you so much for coming on the program, and Always look forward to talking to you and look forward to our next conversation as well.
Thanks, Bill. Call anytime. God bless you.
God bless you. We'll take a short break and be back with more in just a minute. Good morning. It's half past the hour. Boy, tomorrow the Twins start their 2018 season against the Baltimore Orioles at Camden Yards. Looking forward to that 1 p.m. start. So I'm getting excited for baseball season. But for now, let's take a break for news, and when we come back, Dr. Kent Kaiser should be with us. Good morning. 26 minutes until the top of the hour. Dr. Bill Diamond is a psychologist, and he said that 25% of Americans say they don't have one close personal friend. Not true for me. I've got one. He's sitting across the studio from me. Kent, what's your last name again? Yeah. Anyway, Dr. Diamond talks about the power of friendships and how it can benefit you.
Let me tell you about the contrast in that, which is the good news is that I believe it was Buckminster Fuller who said, environment is more powerful than willpower. 3 years ago, I got a group of five other guys together to form a mastermind group. And we have a devotional component, but a lot of it's just business. You know, how are you doing in your business? Are you making good choices? Checking in with each other. And you know, that group, which is a little bit different than a Bible study, it's more of a business group, has had a tremendous impact on all of our lives, our careers. Our wives are involved with that as well. But it really highlights this idea that you can try to make changes on your own. And I want to speak to the listener that has had a challenge. Maybe they wanted to lose weight. Maybe they wanted to do better in work. Maybe they've wanted to do better with their savings. But getting yourself surrounded with people that are doing it themselves and connecting socially has a profound spiritual, emotional, and other effect in many different areas of our lives. And I always say, and Marcus and I say this in our book, is don't spend another year trying harder. Get more connected. You're going to get where you want to get much quicker than having the best intentions, trying to fire those excuses, and just being dismayed by the end of the year that it didn't happen for you as a Lone Ranger.
Pretty interesting stuff. You want to go hear that full interview by Dr. Bill Diamond, go to myfaithradio.com, type in Bill Diamond, D-Y-M-E-N-T, or type in what's your excuse. That'll get you there. We'll take a short break, and then Dr. Ken Kaiser is in studio.
What's foundational in your life, and why should you care? This is Jim Garlow. Jesus said in Matthew 7, everyone who hears these words of mine and puts them into practice is like a wise man who built his house on the rock. The rain came down, the streams rose, and the winds blew and beat against that house. Yet it did not fall because it had its foundation on the rock. But everyone who hears these words of mine and does not put them into practice is like a foolish man who built his house on the sand. The rain came down, the streams rose, the wind blew, and beat against that house, and it fell with a great crash. Everything in these houses was identical, except one thing, the foundation. And what is that foundation? That foundation is the Word of God. The person who hears the words of Jesus and puts them into practice, it makes all the difference. This is Jim Garlow.
Good morning. 23 minutes until the top of the hour. Bagpipe music means Dr. Kent Kaiser is in studio. Good morning, Kent.
Good morning.
Got an exciting day around here, don't we?
We do. And by the way, we won in our bagpipe competition over the weekend in Winnipeg. McAllister College Bands swept all of the band categories. Yeah, it was great.
Did you go to Winnipeg?
I did.
I know so little.
I went up to Winnipeg for the weekend and it's great. I mean, you know, I'm up there quite a bit for mission trips in Canada and stuff. So I stayed with a friend of mine there in Winnipeg, and then we had this competition. It's interesting. This competition's indoors. Most of the time, bagpipe competitions are outdoors because they are so loud.
Right.
You know. But we were indoors for this one, as they always do in Winnipeg, because it's a cold time of the year. But yeah, the McAllister College Bands, and of which
wow,
I'm in one,
impressive.
Swept all the top awards. So. great.
And you played. I assume you played, didn't you?
Yeah, of course.
That's really cool.
There's video of it online.
Oh, I don't really want to see that.
Yeah, I know.
No,
right?
I definitely don't want to
crank
see that.
Crank it up.
No, please don't. I'm trying to keep my breakfast down. Let's talk about what's going on with the Democrats, what appears to be abandoning Catholics.
Well, you know, this has been going on for years. It's just sort of interesting because finally Cardinal Dolan, who is pretty prominent in the Catholic Church, you know, he's out on the East Coast, wrote a commentary about how the Democratic Party has abandoned the Catholics. But, I mean, this has been going on for years. This isn't any, you know, revelation to those of us who are political observers. You know, looking at it from the outside, it seems like this goes back maybe 30 years or more. You know, and at one point, the Catholic Church and the Democratic Party were pretty closely tied. If you look back at even like when President Kennedy was elected as a Catholic, you know, mm-hmm. then that kind of cemented the bond between Catholics and the Democratic Party, at least, you know, for a few decades. But basically what the Cardinal was writing about is that, you know, on issue after issue, what you see is the Democratic Party really not welcoming Catholics, to say the least. In fact, it used to be sort of they would make sort of room for the Catholic voters who would typically be pro-life. Mm-hmm. That's a big issue, pro-life.
Big issue.
And actually, there's a reason for, I mean, Catholic theology kind of talks about social justice and taking care of the poor and so on. So you could see where there was a nice fit there between Catholics and the Democratic Party, because those are some of the things that the Democratic Party stands for. But on these social issues, suddenly the Democratic Party has become actually hostile. So you have this, you know, whole contingency of people, Catholic voters, who are really committed to, you know, pro-life and traditional marriage and other traditional social issue positions, and the Democratic Party suddenly putting up these big barriers and actually actively rooting those people out of their party. I mean, I think it's very difficult today to think about who is a pro-life Democrat anymore, a pro-life Catholic Democrat.
Can you name one?
Well, I think that perhaps the last Democratic vice presidential candidate, Tim Kaine, might have been still a pro-life sort of Democrat. I'm not sure.
Well,
I'm not sure.
Not when he ran with
That's the thing. I mean,
he was very pro-life at that point, I think.
So it's hard to think of him. Like, you know, I can think of one maybe in Pennsylvania or something like that. It's rare to find them. You know, even Joe Biden parses it, you know, like the former vice president sort of parses it to like say that he is personally pro-life, but he wouldn't want to, you know, foist his a view on anybody else. So, I mean, some of the Catholic politicians take that particular position, I guess, so as to square the, you know, to take care of the cognitive dissonance that's taking place in their own minds, to say like, okay, yeah, I'm square with my church and square with my political party. I mean, if I don't know how you can parse something like that on that particular issue, you know, I mean, because that's a big one for me, you know, being pro-life. You know, I don't think I could parse it that finely to say like, oh, I'm personally this way so that I'm okay with God, but publicly I'm okay with abortion, you know, because of my political party. That'd be ridiculous. I think it's an insane,
I do too.
A ridiculous position. But that's kind of what you hear from some Catholic politicians who I think are still trying to be okay with their God, you know?
Yeah. Kent, does it seem like what's coming out of the Democratic Party today is either you toe the line or you will be exiled?
Well, that's exactly what happens. And, you know, I saw it once, you know, here in Minnesota, went on a pretty big scale. It was a long time ago, back in the 1980s, actually, where we had a Catholic candidate for U.S. Senate. This is another candidate for U.S. Senate on the Democratic side, and there was a huge fight, a huge endorsement battle between this guy and then this, and it happened to be a woman who won the endorsement, and she was very pro-choice, a feminist pro-choice advocate, and she won the endorsement. And in that convention, what you kind of sensed is that the Democratic Party in Minnesota wanted to purge out the pro-lifers, and the pro-lifers got the message. I'll tell you what, the pro-lifers at that convention left and were so fed up with how they were treated by the Democratic Party here in Minnesota, that they we pretty much had a wholesale movement of pro-life Democrats over into the Democratic Republican Party at that time. And having been a Republican activist myself, I got to say, these were some of the most committed Republicans I've ever seen in terms of activists, because they knew why they were Republicans. They knew that they were Republicans because of the pro-life issue. And so we saw that happen. Like I say, it was a dramatic change in the landscape here in Minnesota at that time. We've seen something similar happen in other states a little before that, a little bit after that, a little less dramatically, because we didn't have like this one seminal moment like we had here in Minnesota, but it has happened in a lot of different places. And finally now, Cardinal Dolan is acknowledging this, and that's great that he sees this, but you know, and I hope that that kind of gives a cue to other to all Catholics to, like, hey, reassess if you are continuing to vote for a Democrat, reassess, you know, where that candidate is actually standing on the issues that are important to you and to your faith community.
Mm-hmm. All right, Kent, let me take a little break. When I come back, I want to ask you about Jonathan Papik. Did I say that his last name right?
That's right.
He's a Northwestern grad.
Northwestern grad.
And he is now the next Supreme Court justice in Nebraska.
That's right.
That's impressive. All right. He's doing something with his life. That's pretty cool.
It is.
Yeah. We'll take a short break. When we come back, more with Dr. Kent Kaiser. It's 15 minutes until the top of the hour. We'll be right back.
Before I put on my makeup, I say a little prayer for you. Walk on in my hand now.
Good morning. It's 13 minutes until the top of the hour. Dr. Kent Kaiser is in studio with me, and we're chatting about Jonathan Papik. He's an Omaha attorney. He graduated with distinction from Harvard, also went to the University of Northwestern here, Northwestern College at the time, probably.
That's right. And yeah. I knew him because I had worked at this think tank down in Minneapolis, and he was actually an intern there. We weren't there at the same time. He was there a couple of years afterwards, but I still continued to work for that think tank. Even today, I'm still affiliated. So, So I knew of his work then, and he was a great intern. And it's kind of fun when you see one of these kids who, you know, grows up and suddenly becomes a big deal. I think everybody always kind of recognizes his intellect was far beyond normal, and you know, from all accounts, you know, when they say that when you're talking to him about the law, that he's operating on a different plane than the rest of us, and I think. What I think what we could see from him, I mean, obviously, you know, you think, well, Nebraska Supreme Court, big deal. You know, it's, you know, for Nebraska, great for them.
I think it's a big deal.
I would not be particularly surprised if at some point down the line he were tapped for the U.S. Supreme Court. I mean, I think that probably won't happen during this presidency because the guy is, I don't even know how old he is.
36.
He's 36. So young.
So smart.
So he's got a lot of work life left in him. And I really wouldn't be surprised if down the line here in a future presidency, if this is the type of person who would absolutely be on a short list for making the Supreme Court of the United States, if not actually chosen. So. Yeah,
I just hope he respects his elders. That way, we're in luck.
Yeah, right. Now, but seriously, when any president who's looking at somebody for anything like a federal court of appeals seat or anything like that, this is somebody who, you know, a Republican president really ought to be looking at because he's solid intellectually and also on the issues. And I mean, he's. He's going to read the Constitution closely, as they
say. I like that.
Right. And not interpret. I think he's just so solid. I think all of us here at Northwestern, and those of us who knew him, saw this appointment and are just thrilled.
Yeah. You're a fan. I like the endorsement.
Is it weird to have you? It's like there's a Supreme Court justice in Nebraska who has groupies, you know, he has a fan base. You know?
It all originates here. All right, Hollyweird just keeps getting weirder, but there are some actors that are finding faith and becoming more bold. And I think Dennis Quaid was one of the more recent ones to come out after, I can only imagine, and pretty much make a declaration for Christ. I don't know how he's growing in his faith, but there's another actor, Mario Lopez. He just kind of came forward and was baptized in the Jordan River recently, and he's now taking a stand.
Yeah, I haven't seen the movie. I can only imagine. I hope to see it on Good Friday, actually. Maybe I can report back on it, but I've heard all good things about it. And yeah, Mario Lopez, this is interesting. I think that this is an interesting case because he is the type of kind of young actor who records everything on video and puts it all out there on social media. And people should just go and look for this. He was recently baptized. He's Catholic. He was baptized in the Sea of Galilee, and he records each step of the process of this baptism and what it was like being there. He went to the Church of the Holy Sepulchre and other historic sites, and he's kind of interpreting this from a very personal perspective. It's actually really inspiring, I think. Mm-hmm. And we don't see enough of this from Hollywood, I think. I mean, sure, I know that there are other people of faith in Hollywood, but oftentimes they kind of keep it quiet.
They're underground.
That's right. They keep it quiet because they think that if they're too vocal about it, that they're going to be blacklisted or something. There are a few. Another one who I recommend that people follow, actually, if you're on Twitter, another one to follow is Patricia Heaton, who played the mom on Everybody Loves Raymond, and she was the mom on The Middle, which I think is a show that just recently wrapped up. But she is a strong Catholic and strong pro-lifer, and it does not shy away from making commentary on Twitter, especially when it comes to pro-life issues. She's been especially strong, as people have suggested, that we should abort babies who might potentially have Down syndrome. Mm-hmm. She's really got a heart for babies and for that issue.
Uh-huh.
And I mean, I've seen her in person come out and talk about politics, and of course, she usually falls on the Republican side because she's pro-life, and she'll talk about how there's a small cadre of actors like her, Gary Sinise, Kelsey Grammer, others, who she says that they actually get together. I mean, they actually collude. They actually get together as like a support group in a way and actually go out and help candidates. The few vocal actors and actresses who are, you know, willing to step out there. But I mean, I suppose at some point you reach a level of success like she has, or like Kelsey Grammer or Gary Sinise or now Mario Lopez. I mean, you know, they've reached this echelon of success where, you know, they don't care anymore in a sense. Like if they get, they're not going to get blacklisted. And even if they did, who cares?
Right? Well, Kent, what do you think of the remake of Roseanne Barr show where the family is pro-Trump?
I love it. I just watched it last night because they had like the two episodes on last night. I think it's great because it is a very honest commentary. I think the president should make a cameo on that show. They are talking like normal people. This is so refreshing. Is and it's not that everybody on the show is pro-Trump. In fact, the part of the plot is that some of the family is not, but the Roseanne character herself is pro-Trump, as she was in real life. She voted for Trump in real life because of especially foreign policy issues. She didn't think that Hillary Clinton was strong enough. She thought that Hillary Clinton was too anti-Israel. And Roseanne Barr is, of course, pro-Israel. And so that's why she voted that way. But it's very interesting to see the dialogue on this show, especially between her and her sister's character, who voted the other way. But, you know, Roseanne lays it out there like a normal Trump voter. And so if anybody, you know, I mean – I like the show. I think that it's a true, honest commentary on modern American life. And it's kind of funny, of course, this show was on literally 20 years ago. It's hard to believe it's 20 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
But much of the comedy is, of course, about how things haven't changed in 20 years. And they have all the same actors on there, which is great because it's almost as though – and John Goodman, the guy who plays Roseanne's husband – actually said in an interview that it was almost as though they had gone away for a 10-day vacation and came back and everything was just exactly the same. And it really feels that way when you watch the show.
So do you eat snack food while watching TV?
Of course.
What do you eat?
Well, I had chips last night. Yeah. They were actually, this is funny. I bought this bag of haggis flavored chips at the Scottish Festival up in Winnipeg. I know. I thought,
haggis chips?
Haggis flavored chips.
I'll never look at you the same again.
I know. They were actually really good. I mean, I like haggis, but of course, you can't get good haggis in America because,
thank goodness we can.
It's made with, in real life, in Scotland, it's made with sheep stomach and all the little innard parts of a lamb. But in Scotland, it's made with sheep's lung, which is not considered to be food here in America. And so you can't actually serve it. You can't actually have real haggis in America. So someday I want to go to the world competition for bagpipes, and then I can have actually real haggis.
Well, Ken, thanks for coming into the studio for the last time. we've got a busy day with Congressman Emmer.
U.S. Representative, U.S. Representative Tom Emmer is coming to speak to my class, but you're going to have him first. So.
I'm getting him first. He's coming in at 7:30, so looking forward to that conversation. So thanks so much, and have a great day. I'll see you next week.
Thanks for having me on.
Yep, 4 minutes until the top of the hour. We'll take a short break and be back to wrap up hour one. Special thanks to Dr. Ken Kaiser for coming into the studio once again and reporting on his haggis chips. Boy, I'm going to have trouble getting that one out of my head. Here's another thing I learned in hour one. Baltimore Orioles is a hard thing to say, especially at 6:15. Coming up in the next hour, Bill English will be with us from BibleandBusiness.com, and then Congressman Tom Emmer will be joining us at 7:35. So we're looking forward to that conversation. It's all ahead on the Early Morning Late Show. Thanks for being with me. Be back in a minute. Thanks for listening to the Early Morning Late Show podcast. These conversations are available because of your prayerful and financial support. Make a gift now at myfaithradio.com. To avoid missing future editions of the Early Morning Late Show, subscribe to the podcast today at iTunes or your podcast player. And thanks for sharing this audio link with a friend and grow the impact of the Early Morning Late Show.